The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Etaṃ santaṃ etaṃ paṇitaṃ යදිදං සබ්බ සංඛාර සමතෝ සම්බූපදීපටි නිසග්ගෝ තන්නක්ඛයෝ විරාගෝ නිරෝධෝ නිබ්බාණං. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the assembly of the Venerable Meditative Monks, this is the 29th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. We made an attempt in our last sermon to highlight the impermanence of the stage trappings from the beginning of an aeon to its end. This great earth stage presents for the drama of existence of samsaric beings enacted on it. Putting it side by side in vivid contrast to each other, the description of the beginning of the aeon as given in the Agganya Sutta and the description of the destruction of the aeon in the Satya Surya Sutta, we try to arouse a powerful perception of impermanence leading to disenchantment, which is the key to Nibbana. A resonant echo of these discourses of the Buddha, suggestive of the impermanence of this drama of existence and the earth stage on which it is enacted, comes to us through the Mahahattipadopana Sutta, preached by the Venerable Sariputta. Tassa hinama auso bahirāya patavidhātuya tāva mahallikāya anicchatā paññāyissati khaya dhammatā paññāyissati vaya dhammatā paññāyissati viparināma dhammatā paññāyissati kimpanimasse mattattakasse kāyasse tanhupādinnasse ahantivā mamantivā asmītivā Even of this external earth element, friends, great as it is, an impermanence will become manifest. A liability to destruction will become manifest. A liability to waste away will become manifest. A liability to undergo change will become manifest. What to say of this ephemeral body, clung to by craving as I, O mine, O am? On the other hand, there is no justification for such claim. This pithy paragraph of the discourse is eloquent proof of the fact that it is possible to dispel the latencies to conceit leading to eyeing and mining by penetrating into the impermanence of this puny internal earth element through the broader perspective of the impermanence of the vast external earth element. Anittancha bhavehi mananuse mujjha. Develop the signless too and give up the latency to conceit, was the advice the Buddha gave to Venerable Rahula in the Rahula Sutta of the Sutta Nipala. It is clear from this advice that when signs fade away through the perception of impermanence, latencies to conceit also lose their hold on the mind. Instead of pervertly exploiting the canonical discourses describing the impermanence of the external world with wrong reflection, in order to indulge in worldly speculation, we should arouse radical reflection and project them into our own internal world in order to understand the vanity of this drama of life. Where are the actors and actresses who played their part in the early acts of our drama of life? Where are those stage decorations and trappings? Though they are no more, so long as latency is to perception, a amassed through them, persist in us. There is nothing to prevent us from indulging in thoughts and proliferations. When we reflect on the impermanence of the entire world, we get dispassionate about the heap of preparations in our drama of life, reckoned in terms of objects, events, and persons. When dispassion sets in, signs fade away, like in a blurred watercolor painting. For a meditator developing the perception of impermanence, the world might appear like an indistinct water painting with blotches of color. When the figures in the painting cannot be distinguished according to color and shape, there is less room for the perception of diversity, nanaprasanya. Thereby latencies to conceive that give rise to divisions and conflicts are also attenuated. That is why the Buddha always reminds us of the perception of impermanence as an important subject of meditation. He has recommended in particular the signless concentration, for instance in the Khanda Sanyukta of the Sankara. Tayomi bhikkave akusala vitakka, kama vitakko, vyapada vitakko, vihinsa vitakko. Imecha bhikkave tayo akusala vitakka kva aparisesa niruddhanti. Chatusu va satipatthanaisu supatitthita cittasya anuhittam va samadhin bhavayatu. Yamanchidam bhikkave alameva animitto samadhi bhavayatu. Animitto bhikkave samadhi bhavito bhavulikato mahapalo mahansansa. Monks, there are these three kinds of unskillful thoughts: sensual thoughts, thoughts of ill will, thoughts of harmony. And where monks do these three unskillful thoughts, he is without remainder. For one who dwells with the mind well attended by the four foundations of mindfulness, or for one who develops the signless concentration. So much so that this is reason enough for one to develop the signless concentration. Monks, when the signless concentration is developed and cultivated, it is of great fruit, of great benefit. From this quotation it becomes clear that there are two methods of making the three kinds of unskillful thoughts cease without residue. The first method is to have a mind well attended by the four foundations of mindfulness. The second method is the development of the signless concentration. The particle va, o, shows that it is an alternative. It seems, therefore, that by developing the signless concentration, these thoughts and concepts do not get an opportunity due to the very fact that signs fade away. It is because of our samsaric habit of taking in signs that thoughts and proliferations arise in us. But even in our endeavor to liberate our minds from thoughts and proliferations, we cannot help resorting to a particular mode of taking in signs. One cannot do without them altogether. We have often mentioned the reason why the Buddha proclaimed a middle path. It is in the nature of some things that, though they have to be given up, they cannot be fully dispensed with. So the middle path has to be a gradual path. Anupubba Patipada. The middle path itself becomes a gradual path because there has to be a graded system in the course of practice to be followed. If we are to present the fundamental idea behind these two terms, the middle path and the gradual path, we may say that the course of practice leading to Nibbana is in principle both pragmatic and relative. It is pragmatic in the sense that it has a practical value, as it is directed towards some goal. It is relative to the extent that the stages that go to make up the path have no absolute value in themselves. Each stage has only a relative value, being of significance in relation to the next stage. Every stage in the graded path is dependent and relative. On an earlier occasion, we happened to mention the simile of the relay of chariots in the Rathavinita Sutta. Like stage coaches, the chariots run relative to each other. It is an illustration of the principle of relativity. So even in the attempt to liberate the mind from its hold on science, we cannot help making use of a particular set of signs. In that attempt, we have to be guided by the first principles of relativity and pragmatism. In order to explain these first principles, we made use of a certain simile in one of our earlier sermons. The simile is sharpening a razor. To refresh our memory, the main purpose of bringing up this simile was to show the difference between meditative reflection, sammasana, and dogmatic adherence, paramasana. Whereas paramasana means tenacious grasping, sammasana is a particular way of holding lightly for some subtle purpose. He took up the razor simile to illustrate the distinction between the two. If one grabs the razor roughly and moves it up and down the whetstone, it would get blunt. But if one catches hold of the razor in a relaxed, nonchalant way and mindfully sweeps the whetstone back and forth, it would get sharpened. This way of reflection on preparations, or sankharas, reminds us of the two terms vipassana, insight, and anupassana, contemplation, which again are relevant to the theme of pragmatism and relativity. As an illustration, let us take the case of a carpenter planing a piece of wood. In the process of planing, from time to time, he might hold up the piece of wood to his left eye and with his right eye closed might give it a critical glance. There is something sinister about this way of looking. It is as if an expert is directing a fault-finding critical glance on the work of an inexpert. But here it is the carpenter himself looking at his own artifact. Why does he do so? He is himself playing the role of a critic in order to find out his shortcomings as a carpenter. If he complacently looks at it with excessive self-confidence, he can never rectify his errors and improve himself. In the two terms vipassana and anupassana, we have a special way of seeing that is penetrative as well as contemplative. It is in short an objective approach to understand the subjective in one's experience. It is in short an objective approach to understand the subjective in one's experience with a view to attaining perfection. The Theragatha, we find Venerable Mahamoggallana Thera stating the purpose of this special way of seeing in the following verse. Sukumam pati vidhanti valagdham usunayatha ye panchakhande pasanti parato nocha attato. They penetrate into that which is subtle like a horse's hair with an arrow, who look upon the aggregates five as something alien, not their own. Sakula theory in the theory gatha. Why is there something similar in the following verse? Sankhare parato diswa hetu jate palokini pahasin asave sabbe siti bhutami nibbuta. By seeing as alien all preparations, as causally arisen and fragile, I have given up all influxes, become cool and extinguished. In the discourses, personality view or sakkayaditthi is described in such terms as rupam attato samanupasati. He looks upon form as self, and vedanam attato samanupasati. He looks upon feeling as self. That is the way with the wording, untaught in the Dhamma. But the noble disciple who has heard the Dhamma, particularly the one who meditates, makes use of this looking upon as alien parato. That is how his way of seeing becomes an insight, vipassana, a contemplation, anupassana. The term anupassana as a particular mode of seeing in accordance occurs in the Satipatthana Sutta in a way that has puzzled many a scholar. Phrases like kaya kaya anupassi viharati and vedanasu vedana anupassi viharati seem to defy translation. In the body he dwells seeing in accordance with the body. What is this seeing in accordance? That is what a carpenter is doing. This meditative carpenter too has to direct a critical glance at the preparations in order to find out their shortcomings. He has to look upon them as alien, parato. That is the significance of the expression kaya kaya anupassi. If he starts off with the prejudice, this is my body, what is wrong with it? There is little chance that he will see its shortcomings, its impermanent, suffering, not self characteristics. If he is to see them, he has to adjust his point of view. He has to look upon the body as alien, parato. From this alien point of view, the meditative carpenter not only discovers the shortcomings in his artifact, but also adopts a technique of planing to smoothen out the rough edges. What are these rough edges? The protuberances of craving, conceits and views. Though this is a pure heap of preparations, Suddha Sankhara Punjo, as Venerable Vajra calls it, there are three protuberances, three rough edges to be planed down in the form of craving, conceit and views. To smoothen them out, the meditative carpenter resorts to a kind of plane. Let us now listen to the sound of his plane. Na etan mama na eso hamasmi na meso atta. Na etan mama na eso hamasmi na meso atta. Na etan mama na eso hamasmi na meso atta. Not this is mine, not this am I, not this is myself. Not this is mine, not this am I, not this is myself. Not this is mine, not this am I, not this is myself. It is this sharp not, na, that cuts away the protruding defilements. So it seems that these phrases are not mentioned in the discourses for the purpose of grasping them as some sort of dogmatic formula. They have a pragmatic and relative value for the meditator in his planning to do away with those rough edges. In this context, we may allude to the term ussaga, which is particularly relevant to the theme. This term comes up in some discourses, but its meaning is not quite clear. It seems to imply something that comes up as a protuberance over swelling, something that surfaces and shows up. Cravings, conceits and views are such swellings or protuberances which show up from this heap of preparations. These swellings have to be planed out. A verse in the Tuvataka Sutta of the Attakavagga in the Sutta Nipata is suggestive of these nuances of the term ussaga. It is a verse that can be used even for reflecting on the peace of Nibbana, Upasamanasati. Majje yatha samuddhasya umina jayati khito hoti evam khito manijasya usadang bhikkhunna kareya kuhinti. As in mid-ocean no waves arise and it is all steady and motionless, so unmoved and steady let the monk be, let him not form any swelling anywhere. This verse, by contrast, insinuates that the worldling's mind is much nearer the seashore, where ripples turn into waves and furious breakers. In mid-ocean, there is not that fury. There are no waves or ripples. It is all calm and peaceful there. So the meditative carpenter has to plane down the rugged surfaces with insightful contemplation, until those cravings, conceits and views that show up are smoothened out, and only a pure heap of preparations, Suddha Sankhara Punjo, remains. How the principle of relativity is applicable to this meditative planing down, in accordance with the concept of a gradual path of practice, Anupubba Patipada, is beautifully illustrated by the Sakkapanya Sutta of the Divinika. This planing down the rough surface of thoughts and proliferations has to be done gradually and systematically. Even a carpenter, while planing a piece of wood, has to adjust his instrument from time to time in the course of planing. He might even pick up another plane when the surface gets smoother. The planing down of thoughts and proliferations as a fading away of signs is a gradual process. The Sakkapanya Sutta provides us with a good illustration of it in the form of a dialogue between Sakka, the king of gods, and the Buddha. The dialogue was so pithy and deep that at the end of it, Sakka attained the fruit of stream winning. The first question that is relevant to our discussion is worded as follows. Chandopanamarisa king nidano, king samudayo, king jatiko, king papa. Kisming sati chando hoti, kisming asati chando nahoti. What, dear sir, is the cause of desire? What is its arise? What is it born of? What is its origin? Then what is there does desire come to be? When what is not there does desire not come to be? The Buddha's answer was, Chando kho devanaminde, vitakka nidhana, vitakka samudhyo, vitakka jatiko, vitakka pabhava. Vitakke sati chando hoti, vitakke asati chando na. Desire, O King of Gods, has thinking as its cause. It arises with thinking. It has thinking as its origin. When thinking is there, desire comes to be. When thinking is not there, desire does not come to be. In the same way, Sakka asks, what is the cause, the arising and the origin of thinking? And the Buddha replies, reckoning is born of prolific perception. Papancha Sanya Sankha, O King of Gods, is the cause, the arising, and the origin of thinking. So then it seems that reckonings born of prolific perception, Papancha Sanya Sankha, is the cause of thinking. We happen to discuss this particular term at length in our analysis of the Madhupindika Sutta. The term Papancha actually stands for a proliferation of thoughts, of cravings, conceits and pips. Now Sankha has the sense of reckoning or designation. The Buddha's reply therefore implies that thinking arises based on those designations. The next question of Sakka is, Katam patipanno panamarisa bhikkhu papancha sanya sankha nirodha saruppa gamini patipadam patipanno hoti. How has a monk to set out, dear sir, so as to become one who is treading the path of practice conducive to the cessation of reckonings born of prolific perception? The Buddha's answer to this question is directly relevant to our understanding of the gradual path, Anupubba Patipada. Somana sampahan devananinda duvidhena vadana sevitabbambi asevitabbambi. Domanas pahang devananinda duidhena vadana sevitabbampi asevitabbampi. Upekham pahang devananinda duidhena vadana sevitabbampi asevitabbampi. Even happiness of King of Gods, I speak of as being of two kinds. One to be pursued, the other not to be pursued. Even unhappiness of King of Gods, I speak of as being of two kinds. One to be pursued, the other not to be pursued. Even equanimity, O King of Gods, I speak of as being of two kinds. one to be pursued, the other not to be pursued. Then the Buddha goes on to explain it further as follows. Tathayam janya somanasam, imam komi somanasam sevato, akusala dhamma abhivaddanti, kusala dhamma pariyayanti iti, eva rupam somanasam na sevita. Tathayam janya somanasam, imam komi somanasam sevato, akusala dhamma pariyayanti, kusala dhamma abhivaddanti iti, eva rupam somanasam sevita. Tathayam che savitakkam sacharam, Ganche avitakkan avicharam, ye avitakke avichari se panitata. Out of them, whatever happiness about which one knows, while pursuing this happiness, unskillful thoughts grow and skillful thoughts decline, that kind of happiness should not be pursued. Out of them, whatever happiness about which one knows, while pursuing this happiness, unskillful thoughts decline. And skillful thoughts grow, that kind of happiness should be pursued. And there too, of that happiness which is accompanied by thinking and pondering, and of that which is not accompanied by thinking and pondering, whatever is not accompanied by thinking and pondering is the more excellent. From this we can infer the fact that the happiness unaccompanied by thinking and pondering is nearer to Nibbana. This is the criterion we can glean from this discussion. In the same way, the Buddha goes on to analyze unhappiness as being twofold. Out of them, that which is productive of unskillful thoughts should be avoided. And that which is productive of skillful thoughts should be pursued. But therein too, that which is unaccompanied by thinking and pondering is declared as more excellent than that which is accompanied by thinking and pondering. That is the path to Nibbana. So also is the case with regard to the analysis of equanimity, wherein that equanimity productive of skillful thoughts has to be pursued, subject to the proviso that equanimity unaccompanied by thinking and pondering is more excellent than that which is so accompanied. In summing up, the Buddha concludes the explanation with the sentence, evam patipanno ko devanaminda bhikkhu papancha sanya sankha nirodha saruppa gamini patipadam patipanno. It is a monk who has thus set out, O King of Gods, who is treading the path of practice conducive to the cessation of reckonings born of prolific perception. So then, this discourse is one that is highly significant from a pragmatic point of view. Sometimes a little problem might crop up here. In our discussion of the Madhupindika Sutta in an earlier sermon, we came across the following statement. Yang vitakyeti tam papancheti, yang papancheti tato nidanam purisam papancha sanya sankha samudachananti. What one reasons about, one proliferates. What one proliferates, owing to that reckoning spawn of prolific perception beset him, etc. Apparently, there is a contradiction between this statement in the Madhupindika Sutta and the above quoted reply by the Buddha in the Sakkapani Sutta, where thinking is said to be the cause of desire, and reckonings born of prolific perception are said to be the cause of thinking. But actually there is no contradiction. Since the raw material for thinking is the set of reckonings or worldly concepts born of prolific perception, proliferation only aggravates the situation by further ramification of concepts which overwhelm and obsess the person concerned. In other words, there is a peculiar circularity involved in the process. Even for thinking, concepts evolved by prolific perception are utilized. In the course of thinking, proliferation takes over, with the result that those concepts throw up a flush that tends to overwhelm and obsess the one who initiates the whole process. As in the case of a fermenting agent used in the preparation of liquor, there is a circularity in this proliferation It makes the confusion in samsara worst confounded. Now, in order to break this cycle, a systematic and gradual approach is needed. That is what the Sakkapanya Sutta lays down. It is a task that cannot be done slipshod. It is one that calls for mindfulness and circumspection. The Buddha has described in minor detail the modus operandi from the rugged outset proceeding by gradual stages towards subtler and subtler objectives. It is a forked path where one has to proceed always keeping to the right, choosing the skillful in preference to the unskillful and intuitive in preference to the ratiocinative. So here we have a wonderfully graded path that combines relativity with pragmatism. If our discussion of the terms vitakka, papancha and papancha sanya sangha has already revealed their incompatibility with insight, there cannot be any confusion on coming across canonical references to the arahatthapala samadhi as avitakka samadhi, thoughtless concentration. This term has puzzled many scholars. We find, for instance, in the Subhuti Sutta of the Jachandavagga of Udan, a reference to avitakka samadhi. There it is said that the Venerable Subhuti, an arahant, was sitting cross-legged in front of the Buddha with his body erect, having attained to avitakka samadhi, and that the Buddha uttered the following paean of joy on seeing him so seated. Yasya vitakka vidhupita ajjhattam suvikappita sesa tan sangam aticca arupasanyi chatu yogatigo nechatimej. This is a verse with a very deep meaning, but before getting down to its meaning as such, we cannot help making some observations about the commentarial explanation of the term avitakka samadhi, thoughtless concentration. According to the commentary, avitakka samadhi stands for all levels of concentration, both fine material, rupavachara, and immaterial, arupavachara, from the second jhana upwards. This is an interpretation purely from the samatha or tranquility standpoint. The commentary goes on to say that in the present context it means arahatthapala samadhi based on the fourth jhana. Idapana chatuttha jhana padako arahatthapala samadhi avitakka samadhi iti adhippet. But we have to point out that in the light of the foregoing observations on vitakka and papancha, avitakka samadhi is not a term that is relevant merely to the samatha aspect of Buddhist meditation. It is not simply a term that connotes all jhanas devoid of thought, vitakka. It is a term directly relevant to insight, vipassana. The purpose of samatha is to temporarily suppress thought, vikambanapahana, abandonment by suppression. It is the task of insight to dig into the roots of thinking and clear up the mess, making them ineffective. In other words, it is of relevance to abandonment by eradication, samuchedapahana. It is in that sense that avitakka samadhi stands for arahatthapala samadhi. But now, in order to clarify this point further, let us get down to the meaning of this difficult word. It might be easier for comprehension if we explain the four lines one by one. The first line is yasya vitakka vidhupita. There the commentary interprets vitakka as all wrong thoughts, such as those of sensuality. The word vidhupita gets the following comment. Ariyamagga jnanena santapita susamuchinna. Burnt up by the knowledge of the noble path and fully eradicated. However, we happen to mention in an earlier sermon that the word vidhupita has an extremely deep meaning, particularly in a context where the two words sandhupeti and vidhupeti were found together. We pointed out that the dhupa element in both words is suggestive of a peculiar ritual connected with incense. Fragrant incense powder is used for the propitiation of gods, while caustic types are used for exorcising evil spirits. So Vidhupita could mean smoking out or expelling of thoughts in this context. Now as regards the second line, Adhyattam Suvikapita Asesa. The commentary takes Suvikapita as an equivalent of Susamuchinna, fully eradicated. But it is more likely that the word Vikapita basically signifies some form of building up, since it is derived from the root klip, to make, build, construct, fit out, from which Sanskrit words like vikalpa, sankalpa, akalpa and kalpana are derived. Adhyattam Suvikapita taken together would therefore mean well constructed within. The second line could now be paraphrased as yasya adhyattam suvikappita vitakka asesa vidhupita, in whom thoughts well constructed within have been smoked out without residue. Let us now try to unravel the meaning of the last two lines. Tang sangam aticca arupasanyi chatu yogati go ne jatinneti. The commentary explains the word sangam as implying attachment to defilements such as lust, but the attachment meant in this context is attachment to thoughts, vitakka. Tang sangam aticca means having gone beyond the attachment to thoughts. Then comes a term which is even more abstruse, arupasanya. The commentary adopts a queer mode of exegesis here. It says, Ruppana sankhatasya ca vikarasya tattha abhavatu nibhikarahetu bhavatu va arupanti ladhyanamang nibbanam arammanam khatva. Nibbana is called arupa because it is devoid of change, that is reckoned as an affliction, ruppana, and arupasanyi therefore means one who is percipient of Nibbana as the goal of the path. It is noteworthy that the compound term arupasanyi could be analyzed in two ways. One can split it up as arupa plus sanyi or as a plus rupasanyi. A signifying negation equivalent to na. In the first case, it gives the meaning percipient of the immaterial self. In the second case, the meaning is devoid of perception of form. There is a subtle difference between these two possible senses. The commentarial interpretation prefers the first sense, trying to establish the term arupa as an epithet for Nibbana rather arbitrarily. It is the second possible interpretation that fits the context. Arupasanyi means devoid of rupasanya, a rupasanya. In one of our earlier sermons, we had occasion to mention that the perception of form is a basic reason for thought activity, as it enables one to pick up signs. By way of illustration, we alluded to the following verse in the Jata Sutta of the Samyutta Nikaya. Yattha namanche rupanche asesang uparujyati patighang rupasanyache ethasa chijyate jata. The anime and form, as well as resistance and perception of form, are completely cut off. It is there that the tangle gets snapped. So it is that same rupasanya that finds mention here too, in this problematic verse. Arhatapala Samadhi is not an approach towards arupasanya, but a release from rupasanya in toto. As we have already pointed out on an earlier occasion, arupa still has the seed of rupa in it. Arupa is only a shadow of rupa and presupposes it. Therefore, the reference in this verse is not to Arupa. Arupa Sanyi has a deeper meaning than that. It implies release from the perception of form, Rupa Sanya, which sustains the illusion of permanence and encourages the grasping of sight. Perception of form and the idea of resistance, patiga, that goes with it, is at the root of this samsaric problem. Now, Rupa Sanya implies the absence of that Rupa Sanya in the Arahata Phala Samadhi. The third line, Tan Sangam Aticca Rupa Sanya, could therefore be rendered as having gone beyond attachment to thought and being free from the perception of form.
Now we are left with the last line of the verse, Chatu Yoga Tigo Na Jati Meti. Chatu Yoga means the four yogas, namely those of sensuality, existence, vips and ignorance, Kama, Bhava, Ditthi, Avijja. Chatu Yoga Tigo Na Jati Meti conveys the idea that the Venerable Arahant Subhuti, who has gone beyond the four yogas, comes not back to birth. So this particular verse reveals to us a deeper dimension of the term Avitakka Samadhi. Coming back to the question of smoking out or exorcising thoughts, it seems thoughts or vitakka are comparable to the army of Mar. In this concern, the important issue of thoughts, so relevant to the life of a meditator, finds an interesting answer. The army of Mar is, in the last analysis, our thoughts themselves. Generally, we take references to an army of Mara in its gross sense. But in some suttas, like the Padhana Sutta in the Sutta Nipata, the army of Mara is defined in terms of thoughts. For instance, one reads in the Padhana Sutta, Kama te pathama sena dhitiya arati vujjati tatiya khupi pasate chatuthi tanha pauchati. Sense desires are your first battalion, and boredom is reckoned the second. Hunger and thirst comes as the third, and craving is called the fourth. The word kama in this context does not refer to pleasurable objects as such, though that is what is usually meant by it. Rather, it refers to thoughts about pleasurable objects. In fact, kama in its real sense does imply thoughts about pleasurable objects, as clearly stated in the following verse of the Samyutta Nikaya. Nate kama yani chitrani loke sankapparago purisasya kamo tithanti chitrani tatheva loke athetha dhira vinayanti chanda. They are not the pleasures, those charming things in the world. Lustful thought is the pleasure for a man. They go on as before, those charming things in the world, but it is the desire for them that the wise discipline. As we already mentioned in our discussion of the Sakkapanya Sutta, desire is the cause of thinking. There, the relation between desire and thought is recognized. It is the desire for pleasure that those who are prudently wise discipline and dispel. All this goes to prove that the word kama primarily refers not to the objects of sense desire, but to thoughts about them. So in the last analysis, we are confronted with the question of thought. For instance, hunger and thirst, kupipasa, are cited as another battalion of Mara. Here too, it is not hunger and thirst in themselves that represent the army of Mara. It is thoughts about them, such as, Kingsu asissami kuangva asissam. What shall I eat? Where shall I eat? For we read in the Sariputta Sutta of the Sutta Nipata, Kingsu asissami kuangva asissam. Dukkhang vatasetha kvajya sessam. Ete vitakke parideva vinayetha sekho aniketa sari. What shall I eat? Where shall I eat? Badly have I slept. Where shall I sleep? Such miserable thoughts led the trainee discipline. as he wanders forth without any boy. Against this background of the paramount importance attached to thoughts, we can reassess the significance of the following verse in the Bodhivagga of the Udana we had already quoted in a previous sermon. Yada havi patu bhavanti dhamma atapino jhayato brahmanas vidhupayam tithati marasenam suryova obhase mantalikham. When phenomena manifest themselves to the resolutely meditating Brahmin, he stands fumigating the hordes of Mara, even as the sun irradiating the firmament. After his enlightenment, the Buddha spent the first week seated under the Bodhi tree, and during the last watch of the night of the seventh day, reflected on the law of dependent arising, both in the direct and reverse order. This joyous utterance has an allusion to it. It is when the insight into conditioned phenomena dawns on the contemplating Arahant that he smokes out the hordes of Mara, like the sun illuminating the sky. In the light of this simile, we can now understand how the hordes of Mara are dispelled. It is the reflection on the law of dependent arising in direct and reverse order that dispels the denizens of darkness of ignorance, namely thoughts. The principle underlying the law of dependent arising is summed up in the following abstract formula, which I have discussed at length. Imasmin sati idam hoti, imasuppada idam uppajjati, imasmin asati idam nahoti, imasa nirodha idam nirujjati. This being, this comes to be. With the arising of this, this arises. This not being, this does not come to be. With the cessation of this, this ceases. When this principle is applied in a thoroughgoing way to conditioned phenomena, they tend to fade away. That is how thoughts are dispelled. In the 12-linked formula, each pair, for example, avijja paccaya sankhara, is based on this dynamic principle represented by the term paccaya. A penetrative reflection into arising and ceasing in a flash deprives thoughts of their evocative power and renders them nugatory. This is the smoking out of the army of Mara, the thoughts. Now to hark back to the Avitakka Samadhi, we come across an allusion to it in the Sariputta Theragatha. Avitakkaṃ samāpanno sammā sambuddha sāvako aryena tunhi bhāvena upeto hoti tāvade. The fully awakened one's disciple, on attaining to thoughtless musing, is at once endowed with silence that is of the ennobling type. This Avitakka Samadhi, then, is none other than the Arhatta Phala Samadhi, which is known as Aryotunhi Bhavo, noble silence. This is not to be confused with the second jhana, in which thinking and pondering have been calmed down by samatha, tranquility meditation. Noble silence in the highest sense is Arhatta Phala Samadhi, because in it the question of thought is fully resolved. That indeed is the Avitakka Samadhi. We get another allusion to this thoughtless concentration in Vimala Theri Gatha. Nisinna Rukha Moolam Hi Avitakkasa Labhini. Seated am I at the root of a tree, a winner to the thoughtless state. We come across a long verse in the Dhritaro Sutta of the Mara Samyutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, where again there is a reference to this thoughtless concentration. To quote the relevant section, Pasaddha Kayo Suvimutte Chitto Sankharano Satimano Ko Anyaya Dhammang Avitakka Jhayi. Body relaxed, in mind well freed, concocting not, mindful, abodeless. Well knowing the norm, he muses thoughtless. All this points to the fact that the Arhatta Phala Samadhi is called Avitakka Samadhi in a very special sense. It is relevant to insight meditation and not to mere tranquility meditation. The problem of thoughts could be fully resolved only when the reckonings born of prolific perception are abandoned. In the Chulavagga of the Udana, we get a reference to this aspect of the Arahata Phala Samadhi. Tena kopana samayena bhagava attenu papancha sanya sankha pahana pachavikamanu nisinno hoti. At that time, the fortunate one was seated reflecting on his abandonment of recollings born of prolific perceptions. At the time, the mind is free from worldly concepts born of prolific perception. Inwardly, all thoughts are rendered powerless. Thoughts do not come up and there is no grasping of signs. It is to highlight this fact that the terms avitakka jhana and avitakka samadhi are used. By way of further proof, we may cite the following two verses in the Sangyojana Sutta of the Sagathaka Vagga in the Samyutta Nikaya. A deity poses the question, Kingsu Sangyojana Doko, Kingsu Tasya Vicharana, Kisasya Vipahanene Nibbana Miti Vuchati. What is the fetter of the world? What is it trading along? By giving up, what do they say? Nibbana is attained. And the Buddha gives the answer. Nandi Sangyojano Loko Vitakasya Vicharanam Tanhaya Vipahanine Nibbana Miti Vuchati. To delight and fretted is the world. Thought is its trailing along. It is that craving by giving up which they say Nibbana is attained. Here again we have an indication of the relevance of thoughts to the question of insight. The Sundarika Bharadvaja Sutta of the Sutta Nipata has the following allusion to the qualities of an arhant. Bhavasava yasa vachi kharache vidhupita atthagata nasanti. In whom the influxes of existence and the sediments of speech as well are smoked out, gone down and exist no more. The commentary takes the word vachikara to mean harsh speech. There is some imbalance between the two terms, bhavasava and vachikara, if the commentarial interpretation is granted. Harsh speech could ill afford to get coupled with influxes of existence to be cited as fundamental defilements extinct in an arhat. It seems vachikara has a deeper significance than that. It probably means the sediments or dregs, Sanskrit char, or speech, namely the worldly concepts and designations, which, as Papancha Sanya Sankha, reckonings born of prolific perception, form the basis of all thoughts. In the Arahant, therefore, influxes of existence, as well as sediments of speech, are smoked out, gone down, and made extinct. This then seems to be the most plausible interpretation of the two lines in question. Bhavasava yasa vachikharache vidhupita atthagata nasanti. So we have garnered sufficient canonical evidence to conclude that the terms vitakka and papancha are particularly relevant to the life of a meditator. Also the fact that the Arahata Phala Samadhi has been called avitakka samadhi shows that the conquest of thoughts is not of a temporary type as in the case of tranquility meditation. On the other hand, it is a transcendence of a more radical type. Through an insight into the relative validity of worldly concepts, their falsifying nature and the perception of permanence underlying them. Avitakka samadhi is a term used to denote that state of complete emancipation of the mind by making all signs fade away, so that the whole world appears like a blurred watercolor painting, thus freeing the mind from the perception of diversity without even resorting to perception of unity.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible free of charge to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.